soul to soul and spirit to spirit. Greetings from the land of Smoky Mountains. Well, we just finished raking up our leaves out of the yard. We had 5 nice sized piles. And now the trees are all bare. And the next thing on the ground should be snow in a few weeks. And so I spent my morning, I'm a little late getting started here because there was perhaps more leaves than I counted. I only received 3 words this week, and I've sort of been waiting for an unfoldment. And the 3 words I received were a divided consciousness. In the book, Parenthesis in Eternity, the next chapter, called The Discovery of the Self, really begins to tell us something beautiful, starting on page 141, which is the last page. And we'll get to that, but we want to today continue with the new section, which is called Rising Out of the Parenthesis, Part 2. Attaining the Mystical Consciousness. And right here we can see a divided consciousness. A parenthesis, a personal sense of life, a human mortal consciousness, and a mystical Christ consciousness. And we are here walking this path to rise out of the tomb of a divided consciousness. We are here to rise out of the parenthesis. And it begins with this, The Unillumined and the Illumined, Chapter 13. The parenthesis in which we live consists of the degree of mental or material limitation that we come under through the universal belief in 2 powers. Removing the parenthesis, and now understand that the parenthesis is your human life. Removing the parenthesis means unseeing the human picture and becoming consciously aware of our spiritual selfhood. If you still believe that you were born, that you had a childhood, an adolescence, young adulthood, adulthood, maturity, and now you're a senior citizen, then you are living in the parenthesis. And we have to remove the parenthesis. And he tells us later in this chapter that it is a conscious activity. A conscious activity is necessary to rub out the parenthesis. Sometimes in my meditations, I see pictures in my mind of my childhood. I remember one in particular where I was in kindergarten, and my sister had attained the heights of first grade, and her girlfriend were singing Kindergarten Baby, Born in the Gravy. And I can still see that picture in my mind. And yet it says here that removing the parenthesis means unseeing the human picture. And so when that comes to me, or any other picture from my childhood, these days in meditation, I must, as a conscious activity, unsee that human picture. And so when it comes to me and I see it, I say to myself, this is not a life. This is a mental image. This is not who I am. This life, this picture before me, is not a life at all. It is a human picture, a picture in the brain, in the mind. And I am not that, nor was I ever that. I have always been what I am, infinite divine consciousness. And by that conscious activity, I am removing, rubbing out the parenthesis and coming up into into Christ consciousness, into a life divine, into my true spiritual selfhood. And so he says, removing the parenthesis means unseeing the human picture and becoming consciously aware of our spiritual selfhood, because after I unsee that human picture, I rest back until I feel something of my spiritual selfhood. I have an inner click, Joel called it. I've never really liked that. I like an inner release, an inner feeling of the presence. My presence, my true identity, is what I'm feeling. And so each time I do that with one of these pictures, I am unseeing the human picture, and I am becoming consciously aware of my spiritual selfhood. And this is the way that I rub out or remove the parenthesis of a human span, and in no other way. What we are really doing on the spiritual path is trying to wipe out that parenthesis by realizing that we are not living in any form of human limitation. We are not living in time. We are not living in space. We are not living in calendars or climates. The more we, that's you and me, attain a living realization of the spiritual nature of our being in meditation, the fainter the parenthesis becomes, and the closer we are to becoming one with infinity and eternality. And so we are rubbing out a divided consciousness, a consciousness that lives part of the time in a human life, in a human span, in a parenthesis, and part of the time in a divine mind, in consciousness. We are rubbing out a divided consciousness and coming into the one consciousness. The moment we perceive that there is but one life, one consciousness, and that we are living that life, the parenthesis is being removed. Over and over, we must have this inner experience where we remove or rub out the human picture, the human span, the parenthesis. Sometimes I spend even, over an hour going through various pictures of this human span and rubbing them out consciously recognizing I'm not that. I never was that. I am divine, one consciousness now, Christ consciousness. The allness of God is my consciousness, and I am that. And so I take this very seriously, that this is a conscious activity to rub out the parenthesis. Folks, it is not just going to happen. It's not just going to happen. It's going to take your participation. You're going to have to throw yourself completely from your longest toenail to your longest hair into this inner activity, consciously rubbing out the parenthesis. How else do you think you will be resurrected out of the grave of a human span? It's not going to happen, and he says that later, it's not going to happen just by leaving this sphere, this plane of existence. If you don't do it here, you'll have to do it there. How many? Well, the one that comes to mind is John Edwards, who had that famous program, Crossing Over, and he made contact with, well, if not thousands, then hundreds of entities on the other side. But every entity that he contacted, to my awareness, was still a human entity. True, it didn't have body, but it was still a human entity. You could tell by how it reacted and acted, and the messages that he brought forth. And so he was not touching that Christ consciousness. He was touching a human entity. And so the point is, if you do not do this now, you will have to do it then, because then will be now, and you will still be faced with the same problem. How do I rub out the parenthesis? How do I step out of a divided consciousness? And so he says, the moment we perceive that there is but one life and that we are living that life, the parenthesis is being removed, at least being so rubbed out that there are only faint traces of it left. For centuries to come, there may be remnants of that parenthesis in the lives of all of us, but it will not be such a hard and fast parenthesis that it imprisons us in mortality, that is, in a material human concept of life. And I do not believe that it will be centuries to come, we'll still have parts of it. I do not believe that. I believe that things are accelerated now, and it is possible to step out of this parenthesis to such a degree that when you leave this plane, the final dropping of the parenthesis is completed, accomplished, and you find yourself wholly immersed in Christ consciousness. Every meditation that results in an inner response hastens the fading out of the parenthesis. Now remember, the parenthesis is the entire charade, facade of a human identity. Every person you thought you were growing up, right up to this present moment, is not the truth about you. And that's the parenthesis, this human span that we have to, this human identity that we have to step out of. That is a divided consciousness. If you spend 9/10 of your day in a human mentality, in a human sense of life, and only 1/10 in meditation, and out of that 1/10 only a few moments in this divine consciousness, then you are living in a divided consciousness. And so you will experience grace, but you will also experience the belief in good and evil, the belief in a life that comes under time, space, calendars, and climates. It is expedient for you that you make this a conscious activity. Every experience of depth in meditation makes us less subject to the limitations of the parenthesis, less subject to the calendar, to climate, and to the changing economic conditions of the world. And now he's going to go into something that maybe we don't like to hear very much, and that is that we actually like living in a parenthesis. We actually are not that willing to let it go. But let's hear what he has to say, and let's be honest if we see ourselves here so that we can make a change. One of the evils of living inside the parenthesis is that we resist change. As long as our particular parenthesis is halfway comfortable, we want to live in it. Now, is that us? Yes, some of the time it is, isn't it? Well, it's pretty good. This year I cleared 40,000 and my home's pretty comfortable. My health is not too bad. Well, there's those two things there, but it's really not too bad, comparatively speaking. And I have a pretty good set of friends, and we like to play bridge or parcheesi or something on Thursday nights, and life's pretty good. So I think I'll just turn on the TV and vegetate. Oh, wait a minute. Now I was going to meditate. Well, I'll do that tomorrow. Okay? We're comfortable in our human mirage, dream. It does not even have to be a healthy or wealthy parenthesis, so long as there is enough for survival and the pain is not too severe. But while human nature resists change, spiritual unfoldment compels change, breaking up the old patterns continuously. In fact, spiritual progress demands that every form be broken, no matter how good it is. That is why if you, for a time, lived in human harmony after you began this path, and things came to you rather easily, and the spiritual principles provided companionship and health and supply, and now all that's going out the window or breaking up, or you're facing lack or limitation, or your spouse has left you, or the job that you relied on so long is evaporated. Well, welcome to the club. Spirit is breaking up your human parenthesis. And you can go with the flow, or you can resist. And if you resist, you'll put together a fairly decent human life and have to go through this again down the line. Spirit will not let you stand still. And so if these things are being broken up, it's actually a time to be grateful. I know it doesn't feel that way, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that light is God. And God is bringing you to a greater sense of your true identity if you will let go. Let go and let God. No matter how comfortable life may be, Spirit will not let us rest in some degree of finiteness, even if that finiteness should be what the world calls $1 million or its equivalent. To Spirit, that is still finiteness. And infinity does not mean that Spirit is going to give us 2 million. It means that it is going to give us greater freedom, greater harmony, and increasingly less dependence on material forms and limitations. Advancing evolving consciousness would ensure an improved state of affairs, but that improvement probably will not come as it should come, as a natural evolution of progress, because human beings are too determined to hold on to what they have, and they will not give up their limitation for something unknown. Human nature tries to hold on to the past, to hold on to the present limitations. It is unwilling to break through for something else. If we were willing to surrender each day what we had yesterday, and this includes even your realizations, we would find something better tomorrow. But our very attempts to hold on to what we have takes it away from us by force. Now, this rest of this paragraph is underlined in my book. In the margin I wrote, let go absolutely. The only way in which we can remove the parenthesis, this human span, harmoniously and without pain, is by allowing the changes to come without living in or trying to hold on to the past, and by not believing that every change means failure, even though it may temporarily carry with it a lack of some of the material comforts. The spiritual universe has a completely different set of values from that of the material. And now, I can attest to this because in 1995, I was told to move to North Carolina. And at that time, I lived in Florida. And here's the thing about it. The house I was in was on 5 acres, and I had only 5 payments, that's 5 months, to go, and the entire thing would have been paid for. I had a master's level position working with family crisis, and I was well esteemed by my associates, and I had a group of men that I worked with in a spiritual capacity, and I was pretty comfortable. I was real comfortable. But this nagging voice kept saying, North Carolina, North Carolina, North Carolina, until I got tired of it. And I came to North Carolina to see if something would open up. I am a stickler on this, and that is that I don't confuse a little personal human self-will with God's will. And so I always check things out from multiple angles to make sure that the personal sense of self has not taken over control of the reins. And I must be positive that this is something God wants me to do. And so I came and I looked, and I have learned from my past experiences that when God is the author, things take on a life of their own. The doors open almost by themselves. Like in that talk we gave a couple of weeks ago where we said that the door opened of himself. Well, that's what happens. When it's something God wants, it opens of itself. And so I came up here to look around, and before I could even blink almost, I was the proud owner of, well, I had put down a deposit on 75 acres of land. Now, I had no idea how the rest was going to be paid for, but it was indicated to put the deposit down, so I followed it, and I returned to Florida and waited for developments, and 3 days later, through a set of miracles, the rest of the deposit showed up, which was $14,000, and I gave the man that, and I was now the proud owner of 75 acres. And within 5 months, I was offered almost double what I paid, that is the down payment part. And so I went ahead and sold it, and I turned around and bought 50 acres, only this time I almost paid for it outright. And so you see, things were happening. The ball was rolling, and I wasn't pushing it. So it was obvious I was supposed to come to North Carolina. However, when we left Florida, we sold the house down there and the property down there, and the profit we had after selling that house was only $1,800. $1,800. Absolutely no jobs lined up, no income lined up, nothing except a down payment on 50 acres. And here we came. Up we drove. And we found out that in little small towns they don't have houses for rent in the newspaper. You have to know somebody that knows somebody. And they watched us for 3 days to see how we behaved and how we carried ourselves and how we paid our bills. And then the man at the power company said, go talk to the lady at the bank. We went over to the bank, and sure enough, she had a house for rent. We went up to look at it. We gave her 2 months' rent. And she said, buy my house. And we said, well, we'll see. Buy my house. Well, we'll see. We went back down to Florida. We rented a U-Haul, we came up here, we filled up the house, and then we needed to see what the next step was. And this door opened, and that door opened, and before we knew it, we had jobs, and we were working with kids, and I was working for a mental health, and everything was fine. And then, well, to make a long story short, it's been 9 years since then, well, 10 years since then. And that $1,800 has turned into over $500,000 in property. Now, it's not something that I sought. I only listened to the voice to come to North Carolina. I have never been that interested in money. I use it and I'm as capable as the next person of enjoying a cruise or enjoying a vacation. However, I have never really sought money. I have sought the things of the Spirit. And so Spirit placed that property in a place where it is worth 10 times what we paid for it. And the house that we're in is worth 3 times what we paid for it. So the point is that it may temporarily carry with it a lack of some of the material comforts. And I'm telling you, when we were here with only that $1,800, we were kind of looking at each other saying, well, I hope God knows what he's doing. And of course he did. He always does. Divine consciousness, omniscience, it knows. But we had perhaps dropped down into our parenthesis, hadn't we, if we were worried. Now, even death, he says, does not remove the parenthesis and put us into the circle of eternal life. And that's what we talked about. Just because you pass from the scene does not mean you have lifted yourself out of the parenthesis. You either do it here, there, or you return here and do it then. You will do this. Every knee will bend. But why not now? The wiping out of the parenthesis is accomplished as an activity of consciousness. And what I described to you in meditation, rubbing out those pictures of a human life, that is a conscious activity of consciousness. When you have a meditation and there's a release and you feel your everywhere self, your omnipresent self, that is a conscious activity of consciousness. And so he says the wiping out of the parenthesis is accomplished as an activity of consciousness. And you have to have this activity of consciousness. Nobody's going to do it for you. God will not strike you and make you suddenly rise out of the parenthesis. It's going to take some work on your part, some conscious activity. It is a dying to our humanhood and a birth to our spiritual identity. This is not a physical death or birth. It is the dying daily and the being reborn of the Spirit of which Paul spoke. It is an act of consciousness. The parenthesis is human life. And our purpose on this path is to remove ourselves from the parenthesis while we are here on earth. And you can't make it any plainer than that. And so if you thought that this path was to bring you harmony and peace and joy and material supply and companionship and health, well, then you were mistaken. That's not the purpose of this path. Those are the added things that come and go and come and go and come. But that is not the purpose. The purpose is to remove ourselves from the parenthesis while we are here on earth. And so now you know what your purpose is in life. To step out of a human life. If we do not do that here, we will still have the opportunity afterward. But the passing from this plane into another experience does not of itself remove the parenthesis and place us in eternity or give us immortality. You see, whether we call it removing the parenthesis, rubbing out the parenthesis, rubbing out the human life, rising out of the tomb of humanhood, being resurrected into our true identity, whatever we call it, putting off mortality, putting on immortality, it is all the same experience. And it is one of stepping out of the mortal dream and into our eternal existence here, now, on earth, as a conscious activity. In the degree that we become more and more aware that Spirit is the only power and the only life, and that we do not have a separate life or consciousness of our own, but that God constitutes our being, does the parenthesis become lighter, fading, fading, fading. With every single spiritual realization that we have within us, and with every meditation that results in a conscious contact with God, the parenthesis is growing fainter until eventually, in the final conscious union with our Source, comes the complete elimination of the parenthesis. You are ascended. That's what ascension is. Ascension is not floating up into the sky into some invisible universe. Ascension is rising out of, rubbing out the parenthesis, and awakening to your eternal everywhere self. So the function of a spiritual teaching is to lead man to the awareness of his true identity and to reveal secrets of life that have heretofore been hidden because human obtuseness has rendered man incapable of understanding the underlying principles of existence. In his unillumined state, man does not realize that in order to prosper and be fruitful, he must live in accord with spiritual laws, not in accord with his own will or personal desires. He cannot act as if there were no such laws and then expect to live harmoniously, nor can he escape the operation of spiritual law by attempting to make up his own laws as he goes along. The great masters who brought forth the original teachings upon which modern religions are built knew that there were invisible laws governing this world, and they taught man how to bring harmony to himself through an understanding of these laws, promising, as the master did, that those who follow in this way would bear fruit richly. In other words, they would be working with the laws of life instead of working in antagonism to them. So, let's see if there's something else here before we move on. All right, we're going to stop with the chapter because it's time to talk a little bit about that divided consciousness. If we say that we want to step out of a parenthesis and into eternity, then we know now that it must be a conscious activity. Something must be going on within our consciousness so that this can take place. It won't happen to you accidentally. You won't find a teacher that can do it for you. Yes, the teacher can lift you up, but you yourself must still do the work. Otherwise, when the teacher goes away, you will fall back into the parenthesis. But if you have done the work yourself, then you will be lifted out of that parenthesis. And whether your teacher is on this side of the veil or on the other side, you will still be in contact, because you will no longer be in a parenthesis. And he explains later in this chapter that we, as we are lifted out of the parenthesis of a human span, we can be a member of the internal invisible schools of wisdom, because these exist. They really do exist, and you can be initiated into one of these schools. But getting back to the divided consciousness, do we see now how the time we spend, the days we spend, the hours we spend in a human, completely immersed in a human state of consciousness, then we are locked into the parenthesis? You see, in the absolute, there is no parenthesis. Of course, we know this. God is all. But to walk around saying, God is all, God is all, God is all, will not remove you from a conscious experience of the parenthesis. You can say, God is all, God is all, God is all, as you're dying from cancer, because you haven't done the conscious work, the conscious activity that removes, that lifts you out of the parenthesis. And so it's not enough to just quote absolutes all the time and say, God is all. I am, I am, I am. That won't do it. No, it must be a consciously taking yourself out of the parenthesis. And this we do in our, or more especially in our meditations. Let us say that you are faced with a financial lack or limitation of some kind. And immediately you perceive that you just went to part-time from full-time, or you were laid off, or your rent increased, or somebody that was living in your house, perhaps you were sharing it with a partner or a friend, moved out, moved away, and now you have no way of duplicating the same income that you had before, just last month. And so immediately you start thinking, how do I increase my income? Well, let me see, maybe I can get some overtime, I can take a second job, I can... All of that thinking, gosh, how am I going to pay the rent on the 27th? Let me count the days, I'll mark them on the calendar, I need to have my... All right, you are hopelessly lost in the parenthesis, and you need to knock it off. Right there, catch yourself. Hey, bub, I'm not going to do that. That's my old way. That never did remove me from the parenthesis. No. Get thee behind me. I'm not working in the parenthesis. Joel tells me I can't meet a problem on the level of the problem. And the problem is always in the parenthesis. It's not in the eternal self. And so if I can't meet a problem on the level of the problem, I need to knock that off right now. And so get thee behind me. Now, I am here in this meditation not to think thoughts or do things. I am here in this meditation to have the conscious awareness of that eternal self. So, I need to look at that rather than anything in a parenthesis. I need to look at eternity. And what is eternity? Well, what is eternal? Nothing that I can see with my eyes or hear with my ears is eternal. And so the eternal must be invisible. The eternal must be God. Yes, God is eternal. Never ending. No beginning and no end. And that which God made was made out of God. And so whatever God made is also eternal. And I am the offspring of God. I am God itself springing forth into expression, and so therefore I am eternal. And all that the Father is, I am. God itself manifesting. And all that the Father has is mine. And the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And all of it is mine. Not in the sense of having a title to it, but it is all mine to use as I am directed. And so if all that the Father has is mine, all of the invisible realms is also mine. All of the galaxies and universes are mine. All of the Father's supply is mine. And so, the Father's supply, God's eternal supply, is mine. And now all that I have ever needed to do is to get out of the way, become still, and watch, witness, God's infinite supply manifest itself. And so now, Father, I and the Father are one, then I and infinite supply are one. And now I am still, I am quiet, and I am letting that infinite invisible supply appear however it will, with no ideas, no plan, no outline. I am just still. And behold, I within shall make all things new. And so I am quiet, and I let that omnipresence, that divine self, that I, you go ahead and make all things new. God itself, the allness of God, is my consciousness appearing. The allness of God is my consciousness, infinity, appearing. No asking, no begging, just arresting in the truth that the allness of God is my experience now. Thank you, Father. I rest and I receive the allness of God. And that's all that is necessary to come into an experience of our true identity, which is, in this case, the allness of God manifesting itself. And I do that once, I do that twice, I do that 10 times if necessary over the next few hours in order to rub out the parenthesis and maintain that conscious awareness of the allness of God manifesting itself. And I am totally unconcerned with the pictures of sense. And in some way, and it's really quite remarkable, it never fails, some way that divine consciousness appears as harmony, a new opportunity, income from some direction I never even dreamed, manna right from the sky if necessary, just appears. It just appears. But I'm not fooled. That's not a human life I'm watching. No, that's still the allness of God, invisible infinity appearing. Only now it's appearing as good instead of as lack. And so I go ahead and enjoy it, but I'm not fooled by it. No, the real value is in that infinite invisible supply. And I do the same thing if I'm faced with loneliness because, well, my children have all grown up and left the nest, or I'm grieving over someone that has left or passed on. I do the same thing with companionship, or with a companion that's no longer there. You know the direction the mind goes, and so do I. It automatically falls like gravity, pulling it down to and into the parenthesis, and so the thoughts go to the parenthesis, don't they? Oh, what am I going to do? I'm in my senior years or my middle years, and I'll never find anybody again, anybody that'll put up with my nonsense. I'll be alone. I'll die alone. Nobody will care. I'll be in a nursing home. You know how the mind works. But that's all the parenthesis. Whose life is that? Wait a minute. I decided I was going to rub out a parenthesis, and I am going to do this. I am really going to do this. And so I'm not buying you, you picture there in the mind. Take that somewhere else. Go peddle your papers. I'm not interested. And so I'm going to turn within and rub out the parenthesis as a conscious activity. You out there, or you in the mind, rather, because no illusion is externalized. You, pictures in the mind, That's the only place a parenthesis can exist is in the mind. But I'm not living by a parenthesis. I'm not living in a parenthesis. I am not a parenthesis. That's not the truth of who I am. And so you there, pictures, get thee behind me. Get thee hence. Be still, would you? Now, if I and the Father are one, how far away is my companionship? Is there any place I can ever go and be outside of God, or God outside of the I that I am? Never, never can one be turned into two. And so God is my companionship, closer than breathing, nearer than hands and feet. God is the presence I feel in the wind on my body when I walk outside. God is the purr of the cat that comes up to me and rubs against my leg. God is the sun shining. God is the trees standing so patiently waiting for spring. God is the universe itself, the stars that greet me at night. Even the red cardinals that are still here through the winter. God is the squirrels that I see gathering up black walnuts, and I put them out where I drive across the black walnuts and break them open so the squirrels can take them into their nests for the winter. And we are relating. I have companionship. I have companions everywhere, because I live and move and have my being in God, and God in me. And so if God is my companionship, and God is, then my companionship must be infinite. There are many faces, but there is only one life. And when I go to the coffee shop and I order a salad and a cup of coffee or a glass of water, and the waiter or waitress brings it to me, and I talk with them for a while, have a little chat, that's a individual face of an infinite being. I am communing, and I have companionship with God as that person. And so it may have a female face, it may have a kitten's face, it may have a squirrel face, it could even have a tree face or a star face. But I can never get outside of my true companion, which is God, because I and the Father are one. And I am never alone, ever. All that I ever have to do is come within here and rest in His presence and know that God's presence in me is my presence. And the truth about me is that I am that infinite life appearing in infinite form and variety. And so I can rest here. God is my companionship. And God will appear in an infinite number of ways if I stop trying to find God and chase God down. And lo and behold, I go to rent an apartment, and the lady that takes my first month's deposit, we start to talk. It turns out we have some things spiritually in common. The next thing you know, we're having dinner. And 29 days later, we're married. 29 days. Now, I would never advise that to anybody. Common sense says you have to get to know one another, right? Isn't that what everybody says? Well, common sense only applies to a parenthesis. It doesn't apply to a spiritual companionship. And so the lady that I met and married after 29 days, it's now 16 and a half years later, and we still love one another. And we still have a wonderful marriage, a wonderful sense of companionship. And we are devoted, and in our own ways we serve God. And she respects mine and allows me to function as fully as I can, and I respect hers and I admire hers, and I allow her to function as fully as she can. And we both have God first and each other second. Or we both have God first and recognize that is also true as each other. But the point is that recognizing God as the only companion, 16.5 years later, I never have to be alone again. And should something happen to where we are separated, if one of us passes on, that does not mean that we are alone. I just got through telling you, wherever I am, God is. I am never alone. And so God may take another face, but it will be the same presence, and just as wonderful a relationship. So, in this way, we rub out the parenthesis and all the beliefs that go with it. We stop trying to meet a problem on the level of the parenthesis. We are here to step out of the parenthesis, to live in the eternal, everywhere self, one with the Father, one with infinite supply, one with omnipresent companionship, one with divine life. We'll take this last one and then we'll wrap it up. Let us suppose that we come down with a cough. We've been so busy we've forgotten God. We haven't been practicing any spiritual principles. We've been out there shopping for Christmas presents, out there with those sick people, and now I've come home and I've got a cough. Doggone it. But what does the mind do? The gravity pulls it into the parenthesis, and then the mind starts going with, well, you know, if this turns into the flu, I'm going to miss 7 days, and I won't be able to get enough in my paycheck to cover this Christmas holiday, and you know, it could turn into bronchitis, and they tell me that you have to be careful. There's a strain out there now turning into walking pneumonia, or even double pneumonia, and you know, I don't have much in the way of insurance. It'll financially ruin me, and I'll lose everything. In fact, I could die penniless in the hospital. Isn't that not where the mind goes? It's pitiful when you think about it. That is the parenthesis pulling you down. You have a divided consciousness. Now you're standing in the parenthesis, and where is God? Nowhere to be found. But wait a minute, I've decided to do this thing, and I'm doing it in this incarnation. I am going to rub out this parenthesis. You're not fooling me. I don't care if you have a cough. You're not fooling me. I am not going to be sucked into the parenthesis again. At least not at that level. So let me recognize right now that I am momentarily been operating in this parenthesis, but my job is to remove the parenthesis, to rub out the parenthesis. So I'm not going to look at you, work with you, work on you, or try to do anything with you. You there, you mental images, get thee behind me. Go away. Get lost. Now, what is the truth? I am the truth. I am the way. I am the life. Who is this I? This I is the invisible presence, the invisible omnipresence of God. This I is the only life right here, right exactly at this moment. This I is the only I that I am, and so I am the life means I am is my life. I don't have a physical life, a structural life, a life with organs. Those are mental images, and I'm not working on them. I have an invisible Christ life right here. Yes, I feel it. I feel it now. That's my life. and what God did not make was not made. So let us be done with working on that. Now, this Christ life that I have just declared that I feel, even as I speak, you reveal your life. Go ahead. Live your life. I live, yet not I. Christ liveth my life. You live my life. You live the life that you are right here. And reveal it. I will just be still. You do not need my help. I, the divine life, am living you. I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee. I will not fail thee. Let me live my life now and here. Christ liveth in me. And I rest in that word. I am the life. And I may find, as so often happens, that upon retiring at night, I awaken in the morning and there's no sign of any cough whatsoever. I am rubbing out a parenthesis. I am experiencing Christ living itself as itself everywhere present. Infinitely. And that was a conscious activity going on in my consciousness. I am trading in a divided consciousness, sometimes human, sometimes spiritual. I am trading in a divided consciousness for the one infinite Christ consciousness, consciously aware of itself as itself, omnipresent. Do we see this spiritual work that we are involved in? Do we see that rubbing out a parenthesis and stepping into eternity is a conscious activity that takes place within us, within our consciousness? And do we see that it must break up everything that is human, whether bad or good, to which we are attached? It must break up every financial attachment, every material attachment, every personal attachment, until he comes whose right it is. You have no right to be living a personal life. That's not your right. You gave that away when you decided to walk this path. This is Christ life, and you must allow Christ to live it. You now must have no desires, plans, schemes, plots, or ideas of your own. You must consciously rub out your human span from the time you were born till this present moment. And I'm going to read you one other thing, and then we'll call it a day, or at least a talk. This way is the acknowledgement of our divine sonship. No matter what appearances touch our life in the form of sin, illness, lack, or unhappy human relationships, the way to surmount these is the way of sonship or oneness. And this way no one can walk for us. It can be walked only by us. Spiritual teachers can be our guides on the way. They can make smooth our path today or tomorrow, but we alone can take the way. We alone can live by the way. We alone can walk the way. And how is it done? Only by an activity of our consciousness. Only by virtue of our consciously knowing the truth of the way. I am the way. By virtue of my oneness with my source, I am infinite, I am spiritual, and I am under spiritual law, which means I am under grace. Not under the laws of matter, but under grace. To most of us, there seems to be some form of divine grace missing, with some more and with some less, but what we are dealing with at the present moment is not the appearance, not the human span, but the way through which the human span disappears, the way through which to surmount the difficulties of the moment, and the way through which we are to enter the spiritual kingdom, the way through which we are to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Spiritual illumination comes in a moment when ye think not. But that moment comes only as the result of days, weeks, and years of effort and dedication. Fortunate indeed is the student who has a teacher to guide and instruct him as he travels the way, and to say to him, "This is the way, walk ye in it." So, now you know what I know about a divided consciousness, about rubbing out the parenthesis and stepping into your eternal, everywhere self. And I can only say to you, this is the way. Walk ye in it.